Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Today, New York Times columnist and author Thomas Friedman talks about his new book about warp speed digital globalization and how his small-town Minnesota upbringing taught him a few things you have to upload the old-fashioned way, one human to another human at a time.
And all of us, in our own way, tried to take Minnesota and Minnesota nice values in our own way into the world. A friend of mine, Jay Goldberg, I quote him in the book about Minnesota nice because his wife, Jay told me she had almost been driven off the highway by a very reckless driver. And she came home and said, "Jay, I was so mad I almost honked." Okay? And that is the definition of Minnesota nice, okay?
Thomas Friedman presenting his new book entitled Thank You for Being Late to a room full of economists and international development professionals at the IMF. While Friedman is renowned for his New York Times column and his work in the Middle East, notably his book From Beirut to Jerusalem, Friedman has been writing about the significance of globalization for almost 20 years. Thank You for Being Late is an optimist's guide to thriving in the age of accelerations, according to Friedman. I met him shortly after his presentation at the IMF. So, in your book, you describe a time when technology is changing so fast that, it's leaving people in the dust. There are other moments in our history where people were faced with adapting to change. What makes this time so exceptional?
There are two things, I think, that make this time exceptional. One is, if you think about the railroad, boy, that was a big change for people. Cars, that was a big change for people. Telegraph, that was a big change for people. But these new technologies tended to play in over a very slower period. We didn't just get one trains everywhere overnight. And they also played in over much smaller populations and then larger. But when we got the train in the West, they didn't get it in Gambia at the same time. What's new about these technologies is that they're introduced everywhere at the same time and they scale incredibly rapidly. Hmm. If you look at the time it took, for a Facebook to scale as opposed to the first telegraph or newspaper, and by scale, I mean over a billion people. It's just happening so fast to so many more people, and therefore the impact is more profound.
And what's behind this change? I mean, you speak of three major forces that are sort of converging at the same time.
What's behind this change is we're in the middle of three accelerations in what I call the market, Mother Nature, and Moore's Law. Moore's Law, postulated by Gordon Moore back in 1965, said the speed and power of microchips will double every 24 months. It's now closer to 30, but nevertheless, that's held up. Boy, for aren't many exponentials that have held up that long. Mother Nature is climate change, biodiversity loss, and population. They're all growing exponentially. And the third is the market. The market for me is digital globalization because that's really the foundation of today's global market. Everything that's now being digitized and globalized, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, PayPal. And so all of them are accelerating at the same time and they're all feeding off each other. Moore's Law drives more globalization. More globalization impacts more climate change and more solutions.
And you give in your book many, many examples of how markets interconnect the world more powerfully than they've ever done before. Do you think that generally people are okay with that?
It's like every form of globalization. It has its upsides and downsides. Globalization always goes both ways. It's incredibly homogenizing. It can be incredibly particularizing. It can be incredibly authoritarian, incredibly democratizing. And so it's all about what politics we bring to it to shape it and tilt it in the right direction. And so, right now markets are much more intertwined. The downside of that is if the Chinese stock market goes down 1,000 points, I'll feel it here in Bethesda, Maryland. The upside is I sold 1 million copies of my last book in China. And it's at my second largest market. And so there's upsides and there's downsides. The same upside I get from having access to that Chinese book market can come back to bite me if I'm in an international fund, and the Chinese stock market goes down.
But the people that you, you know, you gain some insight from people in your book, people from your hometown, you know, this Ethiopian blogger. Yes. Do you think these people are okay with the level of how interconnected the world is now?
Well, for them, too, it has upsides and downsides, you know. There's a lot of authoritarianism now in Ethiopia that I think some of the political forces there blame on reinforcement from the outside, you know. And at the same time, my Ethiopian friends have a voice in the world now they've never had before. So all of these things have upsides and downsides.
So what do we lose in our zeal to become super efficient? I mean, what does society lose when human labor, for example, is marginalized in the name of productivity?
Well, look, I mean, some of that is inevitable. It's been happening for a long time. If horses could have voted, there never would have been cars. So we know, you know, there's always going to be displacement. But at the same time, what's new today is that the number of white collar and blue collar, or I should say the number of blue collar and white collar jobs that can be displaced by machines or software. And it's happening very quickly, and it's happening across a broad front. We have software that writes news stories now. It writes sports stories, and it writes business stories. We have software that writes poetry. IBM Watson recently co-wrote a song with Alec the Kid that went to number 4 on iTunes. So if that happened this year, God knows what happens next year. Uber just introduced self-driving taxis in San Francisco as an experiment. I mean, this is not real. This isn't, you know. And Amazon delivered its first package by drone to rural England. Mm-hmm. So this is happening in real time. Now, that creates new jobs as well as old jobs. But the new jobs have one thing in common. They all tend to require more skill.
Yeah, and you speak of, you know, the importance of community in this world that's changing so quickly. But do you think that the advances in technology and the changing job market does not encourage a stronger mm-hmm. community?
Well, it's a real challenge because, you know, the more people are anchored in healthy communities where people feel connected, protected, and respected, the more people are anchored in that context, the more they're ready to reach out, to experiment, to open up to the other. And the more people aren't anchored in communities where they can feel connected, protected, and respected, the more they're going to want to build walls to protect themselves from change in a different way. And that's why I think healthy communities are so important in this age of acceleration.
But it seems that there's more virtual communities than there are real communities.
There certainly are a lot of virtual communities. I'm not against them, but I don't think they can ever replace me going down to the corner bakery, having my coffee in the morning, and being, you know, helped by you know, the waiter or waitress who I've gotten to know, who welcomes me as Mr. Friedman, who brings me the extra dollop of butter that I like, and the coffee exactly like I like it. And so that makes me feel anchored. And if they come up to me with a problem, I want to reach out and help them. Hmm. And that's really what a real community is about. It's where people feel connected, protected, and respected.
Do you think economists now are struggling with the speed at which the world is changing?
Yes, I think that we all are. I think that, as I said in working on this book, I felt like I had a butterfly net and I was chasing a butterfly, and every time I got close to it, it moved. I had interviewed the head of Intel 3 times. I'd interviewed Doug Cutting, the founder of Hadoop, I don't know, 6 times, because things were changing so fast. So I think any economist who's trying to do research on very current events, trying to just amass the data, understand the data, and then spit out some conclusions before the data moves, is going to be very, very challenged. And so it doesn't mean you give up, but you have to be very nimble and very humble because things can change really quickly.
So what do you think the fund can do to sort of better adapt to these three forces that you suggest are upending the world?
Well, you know, I begin as a fan of the IMF and its mission, I mean, which has been originally around helping countries in economic distress and helping them recover. But if I'm right that anchoring people in healthy communities is going to be the biggest governing challenge in the 21st century, so they don't want to get up and migrate. Who wants to leave their home, their dress, their food, their culture, their music? I don't think a lot of people want to do that if they don't have to. Or certainly a lot of people don't want to do that by duress. Some may want to do it voluntarily for other opportunities. And so, we have a huge problem now of migration and from basically sub-Saharan Africa, the arid zones there, to Europe. I just did a documentary for National Geographic on that. And so finding ways to stabilize small-scale agriculture, I think in Africa and in Latin America, in the South in general, I think it's one of the biggest challenges in the world today. I think that's where the new Marshall Plan has to be, whatever you want to call it. But enabling people who want to stay on the land, and most farmers are small-scale agricultural farmers, that's the biggest challenge out there.
That was New York Times columnist and best-selling author Thomas Friedman talking about his new book, Thank You for Being Late. You can watch a webcast of Friedman's presentation at the IMF at imf.org. You can also hear more podcasts while you're there or search for IMF Podcasts on your favorite podcast app.